Here. I want to thank all of you for attending the first lecture of this year's Modern Graduates series. My name is Erin Starr White. I'm an assistant curator of education here, and I work with academic programs. This series is designed to foster a creative dialogue among fine arts and art history graduate students from across the Metroplex. By hosting artists, scholars, and critics with a Texas connection, we aim to expose area graduate students to a wealth of local and regional talent and knowledge. I hope that your participation in these evenings will serve as a catalyst, maybe for future collaboration and for further inquiry. For this evening's lecture, Jenny Vogel will present a discussion on her influences and the underlying themes of her studio practice, such as self-induced voyeurism and the curious history of webcams, the dark beauty of a mediated planet, the failure of capturing the experience of history and humanity in a prefabricated world. Jenny is originally from Nuremberg, Germany, coming to the States by way of New York City, where she attended Hunter College, earning her BFA and MFA degrees in combined media. We're lucky enough to have Jenny in North Texas. She's currently assistant professor and area coordinator for new media art in the College of Visual Arts and Design at the University of North Texas in Denton. That was a mouthful. A few of Jenny's most recent exhibitions, many of them local, are Dead Men Are Heavier Than Broken Hearts, which was a solo exhibition at the Reading Room in Dallas, Glitch, which was a group exhibition at UTD's Central Track, Temporary Occupants, which was a group show at Eastfield College in Mesquite, and all of those took place this year, so she's been really busy. She's participated in a performance piece with fellow artist Shane Mecklenburger at the Dallas Museum of Art and shown at Star Space Project in Brooklyn. In addition, Jenny's work was screened this year at Dallas Video Fest at Dallas's Angelica Film Center and last year at New York's Art in General. Please join me in welcoming Jenny Vogel.
One, two, one, two, one, two. I am waiting by the window, watching the slow changes of the light, tapping my fingers against the glass, perhaps, throwing a shadow in apathy. There is silence in the streets, a silence that has long since become the norm. The danger can be felt, but it presents itself as mute. Everyone is waiting, shadows against a reality that slowly, carefully enters this place, one by one. But nothing happens, and I'm still waiting by the window, watching the slow changes of the light, tapping my fingers against the glass. One, two, one, two, one, two. I have a collection of images on my computer from a variety of sources, organized by categories. Most of the images are added to the library when I research ideas for new projects. Even though these images might never find their way into the work, they create a visual portrait, not only of my interests, but also of myself. The following folders contain the greatest number of images, and if quantity in this case can be an indicator of importance, one could conclude that the topics of these folders are reoccurring themes in my work and can therefore function as a form of an artist statement. So here's a list of the folders in no particular order. Disaster statistics, East German Indians, failed technology, figures in landscapes, horizons, introspective portraits, lobbies, observation platforms, people looking out of windows, stargazing equipment, sunsets, UFO sightings. A few others are the moon, forgotten landscapes, burnt down libraries, chess players, and goalies before a penalty kick. What emerges from this list is an image of solitude, failure of communication, and the beauty of the same. A fascination with the sublime, an elevation of the emotional above the rational, and an overwhelming sense of alienation. While medium always plays an important role in my work, it varies widely from project to project and includes everything from printmaking, drawing, performance, installation, video, and most recently 3D modeling. Rather than showing you the work in chronological order, I have attempted here to organize this talk by the most prevalent themes in my work. Imagine, if you will, a person sitting in front of a computer, staring into a field of glowing information. You are looking directly at this person as they stare slightly below you, gazing just away from you at something utterly different. She looks blank and engrossed in something important. She looks melancholy at an excessive amount of narrow bandwidth content. Perhaps this person is looking at a landscape or staring at a screen just like you. In this series, Your Lips Are No Man's Land But Mine, I'm focusing on this landscape of digital communication and communication lost. Portraits of people sitting in front of their webcams, searching to connect with the rest of the world. These high-resolution photographs of low-resolution encounters are also representations of a contemporary loneliness. And I am a part of them. Searching for subjects on webcam portals, I too become part of the system in which I can see everything and have an effect on nothing. This video is an attempt to capture the narratives of these network cameras. In a strange form of cinema verite, the world passes by me on my computer screen. Nothing ever happens, but the promise that one day I will experience the miraculous is as constant as the refresh rate of the images. 1, 2, 1, 2. There is something nostalgic about these images. In a continuous race for highest definitions, these cameras are outdated, much closer perhaps to the flickering screens of silent film than to seamless streams of data transfers. Oftentimes forgotten in a dusty corner or pointing out into an empty courtyard, the images these cameras broadcast defeat the utopian idea of the global village and paint a dark picture of our mediated planet.
habe auf dich gewartet. Zu lange schon. Zu lange schon suche ich in allen Gesichtern. In allen Menschen, die an mir vorüberziehen. Ich will wieder vergessen können. Ich will nicht vergessen. Wenn du mich lieben würdest, dann bliebe ich bei dir. Ich würde mit dir spazieren gehen. Erst nur an deiner Seite, dann Hand in Hand. Wohin würden wir gehen? Ich kenne da eine Bank im Wasser. Da sieht man den Horizont. Der Nebel verdeckt die Sicht. Nein, der Himmel ist klar. Wir waren zwei Schatten. Ich kenne da einen Ort. Es war Nacht, an dem man durch endlose Gassen wandern kann. Es regnete. Und eine Bank, von der man den Booten auf den Fluss zusehen kann. Nein. Ich würde dich bei der Hand nehmen und mit dir die Sonne blutrot im Meer versinken sehen. Die Vögel würden singen und das Gras auf den Dünen würde rauschen. Dann gäbe ich dir einen Kuss. Nein. Du hast mich nicht geküsst. Die Sonne hat nicht geschienen. Deine Hände waren nass vom Regen. Du hast mich nicht geküsst, nicht am Wasser, noch nicht. Ich erinnere mich genau. Wann wäre es denn? Es war später, viel später. Ich sehe das Wasser, die stillen Wellen. Ich erinnere mich an das Grau des Nebels, an den Regen und an unsere schattenhaften Figuren auf der Bank, noch kämpfend und verzweifelt über die Unausweichlichkeit ihres Schicksals. Das verstehe ich nicht. Dieser unausweichliche Gedanke, dass später von diesem Brennen nichts übrig blieb. Als das Entsetzen. Als das Entsetzen vor dem verpassten Moment. Wo warst du am nächsten Morgen in der Stadt? Warum bist du nie gekommen? Ich würde kommen, ganz sicher wäre ich da. Wie könnte ich denn unsere Liebe so schnell vergessen? Und immer wieder der leere Platz. Und hast du woanders auf mich gewartet? Ich versuche dich in jedem Gesicht der Passanten zu finden, bis es vor meinen Augen verschwimmt und letztlich verschwindet. Ich sehe dich nicht mehr. Wenn wir uns lieben würden, könntest du unsere Liebe nicht mehr vergessen. Oh nein, mein Herz. Dann wäre ich immer bei dir, wenn du es dir wünschtest. Ich habe deinen Namen gerufen, Erinnerung, und du hast mich doch verlassen. Nenn mich bei keinem Namen, denn ich wäre nur jetzt. Ich will dich vergessen. Es wäre mir jetzt gleich. Am nächsten Morgen würdest du mich finden, auf dem Platz. Ich würde auf dich warten. Auf welchem Platz? Schubertplatz, Rathenerplatz, Stresemannplatz. An allen Plätzen dieser Stadt, auf allen Plätzen dieser Welt, Überall würde ich auf dich warten. Nein, es war bestimmt nicht da. Place de la Concorde, Times Square, überall warte ich auf dich. Ich kann mich nicht erinnern. Es ist deine Wahl. Vielleicht wäre es heute Berlin, vielleicht wäre es morgen woanders. Deine Haare sind dunkel, deine Augen sind braun. Meine Haare sind blond, meine Augen sind blau. Nein, ich kann mich nicht erinnern an dich. Meine Haare sind blond, meine Augen sind grau. Meine Haare sind braun, meine Augen sind grün. Wie würde ich dir gefallen? Jeden Tag eine neue Reflexion im Spiegel deiner Wünsche. Ich erinnere mich an die Nacht. Nass vom Regen haben wir uns in alle Hauseingänge gedrückt. Nass vom Regen haben wir beide den Kampf aufgegeben und uns aneinander verloren. Im Nebel wurden zwei Schatten zu einem. Und im Nebel habe ich gewusst, dass ich dich nie wieder sehe. Nein, es wird immer so sein. Jeden Tag schmerzfrei. Bei Nebel, bei Sonne, Nacht oder Wind, auf dem Platz, am Wasser. Es wird immer so sein. Du wirst lieben, ohne zu leiden. Du wirst lieben, ohne die Erinnerung. Süßes Vergessen nach jedem Kuss. Aber du bist da. Jetzt und hier. Keine Vergangenheit, kein Tod, nur du und ich, jeden Tag woanders, in endlosen Möglichkeiten, mit nie erfüllter Sehnsucht. Wir sitzen auf der Bank am Wasser, die Sonne scheint mir ins Gesicht. Ich nehme dich bei der Hand und gib dir einen Kuss. Ja, einen Kuss beim Sonnenuntergang. Dann würden wir uns lieben. Deine Leere brennt mir langsam die Seele aus dem Leib. Deine Öde beruhigt meine Sinne. Deine Fata Morgana spiegelt nur mich. Am nächsten Morgen warte ich auf dich, wo du mich auch suchst. Am nächsten Morgen spielen wir dasselbe Spiel. Nein, es wird immer so sein. Ich kenne deine Bank am Wasser, von der man den Horizont übersieht. Wir sitzen auf der Bank am Wasser. Die Sonne scheint mir ins Gesicht. Wir gehen langsam zusammen, erst nebeneinander. Ich kann mich nicht erinnern. Dann, beim Sonnenuntergang.
I know you won't see this, but I had to get it off my chest. I can't understand why you thought we had to end it so soon. We both had things that needed to be worked out, but to go that far and throw it all away just like that. I'm sorry for the things that I did to make you feel this way. But all I ever wanted was for you to be happy, and all I ever wanted was to be with you. One day, you're going to wake up and realize that I just wanted to be with you and would have done anything to make that happen. And you let it all go. I hope that one day you find what it is you're looking for. I just hate that I was not it. Sorry, and I love you forever. If I knew without any doubt that you were the one writing on here, I would say something to you. But I don't know for sure, so I remain silent. I wish I knew for sure. And because of the way you left things, I have to know for sure. A direct email from you would be best. It must be the fear of forgetting, or the fear of not fully participating in this world. Maybe it is the fear of not knowing what happens in the rest of the world, or the fear of missing the essentials of life. To be at the wrong place at the wrong time. Being aware now, constantly, of all the other places in this world. The dissolving of mysteries through discovery. This planet has become small, but at the same time gigantic and distant. This could be your message to me. This is now concerning everyone. An old voice speaking from the past, speaking about memory, a personal but also generic love story. A text that seems to be generated by all the images at all times. A tired voice that is giving into a new version of the past through negating it. What happened in the past is now happening with every new frame. Prepositions for the future become the actual event at the moment that they are posed. Some of the webcam images remind me of the romantic landscape paintings by William Turner or Caspar David Friedrich. The blurry quality of the low-resolution cameras mirrors the romanticist interest in undefined form and avoidance of empirical realities. Many of the locations in which I find webcams, such as mountaintops, lighthouses, beaches, or the vast landscapes depicting the weather and traffic cams in Alaska and Finland, have striking resemblances to subject matters of the Romantic period. Most importantly, though, my travel from the comfort of my home to these distant locations places me in the liminal state somewhere between heimweh and fernweh, which dictated so many of the romanticist sensibilities. The lights of a port town at night, as seen from halfway around the globe, generally a site of comfort, the harbor becomes as unreachable as the star constellations in a blackened sky. Napoleon once said, "True truths are very difficult to obtain in history. There are so many truths. Even the truth of many honest men will occasionally differ from my truth." All too often, historical truth, so much implored, and which everyone is eager to invoke, is only a word. It cannot exist, even at the time it happens, in the heat of conflicting passions. And if years later there remains agreement, it is only because the interests and the adversaries are no longer with us. There is probably no person who, according to his own way of perceiving things, does not attribute to my real system the fantastic result of his own calculations. And from that again comes the fable agreed upon that will be called history. It could not be otherwise. After the fall of Soviet Russia, the remaining Bolsheviks gathered for a demonstration on Bolshoi Square in Moscow. It was the last stand of a collapsing giant. Mass is crucial in moments of protests, because after all, it is the occupation of physical space in the photographer's viewfinder which will impress the world enough to make history. Representations of reality, however, are fragmentary. In film, reality is represented at a rate of 24 frames a second. Digital images essentially share the same structure. They are an illusion of a continuous image, under which lies a grid of colored fields. The illusion of a continuous movement in film and TV, or the cohesive image of a bitmap or a newspaper photograph, is created only because of the mechanism of the projector, the TV scan lines, the halftone printing or bitmap image, or the calculations of our digital displays. As technology advances, we are confronted with a continuously heightened sensory complexity that potentially will blend that which is real with the virtual. At least that is the goal. But truth lies in between all regimes of truth. Picture the old magician of a CD boardwalk sideshow who by accident reveals the secret compartment in his worn-out hat. All too often, we look away in embarrassment. All too often, we know that if we look too closely, there could be nothing left to believe in. Here we have the famous invasion theme from the Leningrad Symphony by Shostakovich. The theme is widely believed to represent the invasion and siege of the city by German troops. Shostakovich himself was on one of the last airplanes that were able to leave. The score of the symphony was later smuggled back into the city and then performed in an act of heroic defiance against the invaders by the few remaining musicians in the city. This performance is legendary, and so is the endurance and the suffering of the citizens of Leningrad. But history in the making is not a chronicle of emotions. Instead, it is stuff of abstract decisions made around a conference table and the organizational skills necessary to move an army. The narrative of truth and heroism is invented later to assure us not all was in vain. Translating tragedy is an attempt to demonstrate history as it is experienced by the individual. Whistling the impossibly difficult score of each instrument myself, the symphony no longer follows the prescribed narrative of heroism. Pathetic, out of sync, and out of tune, it is simply trying to keep up. Perhaps the experience of facing great tragedies is a solitary one, sounding much more like this. Thank you. Fair once said that in life, nothing is ever wholly and perfectly lived out. Life is the most unreal and unliving of all imaginable being. It can only be described in denials. Only thus, something is always intervening to disturb. In contrast to this stands the thin atmosphere of tragedy. Naked souls here hold solitary converse with naked destinies. Both are stripped of everything that is not their inmost essence. All relationships of life are rooted out so that the relation to destiny may be established. Everything atmospheric between men and things has vanished, so that between them may be the clear, hard mountain air of ultimate questions and ultimate answers where nothing is concealed. Two Coast Guard photographers observed and photographed four bright lights over the Coast Guard station. Photo Recon Labs analyze the photographs as open to doubt because there are no light reflections of the objects on nearby parked cars. Two witnesses watched a dark gray-colored disc-shaped object hover at a low altitude and finally move off very fast to the southeast. The photograph was taken of the alleged UFO. However, detailed investigation of copies of the original indicated a possible hoax. The case is being carried in Air Force files as insufficient data for evaluations since the original photographs were never analyzed. The files of Project Blue Book are filled with such pages. Project Blue Book was a U.S. government institution collecting and evaluating any evidence suggesting the existence of UFOs. Many individuals gave detailed descriptions of their encounters with the unexplained and sent them in for evaluation. The government closed the agency in 1964, and its documents have been made available since. These documents are riddled with redactions, which only perpetuate the mysteries described in the texts. Legend, myth, and the supernatural are persistent forces in society, despite an ever-growing trust in science. It is the iconography that changed. Are UFO sightings replacing the visions of saints and the Virgin Mary? Though now in the scientific rather than the religious realm, the images are strikingly similar. Blurry lights, faint traces, and the conflict between believers and skeptics. In this series, Like a Blind Man, I examine these amateur images of UFO sightings, adding abstraction and suggestive shapes with graphite powder. I do not see the necessity to prove or disprove these sightings, but would rather acknowledge them as a potential document to the necessity of belief. The sublime and tragedy are intricately linked. Kant describes the sublime as an experience of astonishment, whereby pleasure and pain are experienced simultaneously when confronted with grand and excessive displays of nature. Though Kant did not speak of tragedy, this structure in which success and ability is asserted through failure is analogous to the structure of tragedy. Not only is the sublime a tragic structure, but also tragedy is a sublime experience. In fact, tragedy has been described as the staging of a sublime experience. The specific ideological questions regarding content and mediation discussed so far apply to my work in a more general way that has affected it over a long period of time. I can say that my work has always been an attempt to draw a map of the distance between me and my surroundings. In the process of mapping out this relationship, I am less concerned with the actual physical distance of my body to other objects, and more with the distance of my position in and my understanding of the world to that of apparently everybody else. My experience of alienation, therefore, is not only the cause, but also the means for my art-making process, created through the desire to relate to a world from which I see myself at the same time distinctively different. The mapping is a completely subjective process of making sense. In that process of making sense, the distance between me and what I describe as the other plays a crucial role. It is in exploring and understanding the difference that I am able to create meaning for myself. The gap between reality and fiction, the virtual and the actual, the landscape and the figure, creates a mental space in which understanding becomes possible.
Thank you. If you have any questions, I'll turn off the squeaky noise.
I have a question.
Yes.
You write very beautifully, and it's very poetic, and I'm curious if you have influences, writers that you really admire.
I do. I think there's... Sebald is somebody I really admire because of also of his linking of image and text. Magritte Duras had an immense influence on me. I think because of her female voice, and I feel like she has a nice way of balancing the poetic and the romantic, and always kind of on being on that edge of becoming kitschy and maybe softcore, as one of my professors described her. So, but there's a certain harshness and roughness to some of her writing as well. I would say that those two are up there. Then there's some German writers like Alexander Kluge, in his writing mixes fact and fiction, so he will include lists of things, kind of like Benjamin also did with the Arcades Project. But then also weaves in fictional narratives in that whole thing as well. Yeah. Anybody else? Yes.
I had a question about when you were showing part of the video where there was the script underneath, or the text underneath it. What's the relationship? Is that text written before you have the imagery, the imagery after, or how does that work?
If you're talking about the first one, the desert, with the webcam images and the German voiceover, that sort of happened together at the same time. So as I was searching for this webcam footage, I was also looking at chat room conversations. And then so the text was sort of leaned on some of the linguistical qualities of those conversations, or like the Craigslist missed connection posts was also a big influence. So I was kind of doing both at the same time. Collecting webcam images and writing the text. Maybe something I should say about the text is that I tried to, I mean, it's kind of loosely a love story of two voices that never meet. And that was inspired by chat rooms. I saw a lot of conversations in these chat rooms where people were talking to each other as if they were actually having a relationship, even though they were very far apart. So there were a lot of what would we do
if we would meet up. And I kind of took those woulds and coulds and shoulds. And if you basically would replace those with will and cans, then they would very much have a relationship, actually, even though they were in very different places. Yeah. Yes?
The one-two is
when you watch these web cameras, especially the older ones that still upload very slowly. I mean, now some of them are streaming pretty seamlessly. I kept catching myself counting as they're uploading because there's a real rhythm to them. So the 1-2 started out with a performance that used some live webcam imagery, and then also I Skyped in actors who were not in the same space with me. So the 1-2s are part of that text, but somehow they show up in other places as well. Plus, it's also a nice way of calming myself down at the beginning of a talk. But, yeah. Anybody else? Yeah.
What computer software do you use?
For this?
Yeah, in making your videos specifically.
The videos, I just use Final Cut Pro. This presentation, anything with live web cameras, I work with, this is done in Isadora, I could show you, which is not making full use of the program. But it will allow you to bring in live video feeds. Or I've used Max MSP Jitter, which is a little bit more advanced programming software, which I'm still learning. So. And let's see if I can get this. That's Isadora.
How do you spell that?
Isodora. And it's it was designed by a dance company, actually, Trichotronics. It's an experimental dance company based in Brooklyn. And they use it for kind of interactive dance performances, so they can bring in live video streams of the dancers, but also have projections at the same time going on. So,
I have one more question.
Yeah.
Could you say a few words about that final video you showed of the orb rotating, kind of context for that?
Yeah, that was. I made that video for the Temporary Occupants exhibition at Eastfield College. Mm-hmm. And part of that theme of the exhibition was to invite artists to create site-specific work that had something to do with the space. So I went to the college and I started looking around and I found this wonderful institutional room that was a music practice room. And somehow felt like I needed to use that room, that space. Once I removed all the furniture from it, it started to look kind of like a pentagon or a sort of like space odyssey. I don't know, control center, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. And I imagined and that's where I imagined the meteor coming from. The work is still pretty new, so I feel like I'm kind of missing the language a little bit still to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And why exactly it had to be a meteor, I'm also not exactly sure. The squeaky soundtrack then came from, there was a blackboard in the space that as I moved it made this great squeaking sound, and mm-hmm. it made perfect sense that this meteor is like this fancy, you know, shiny structure, that it would make this really rusty noise as it spins. Okay. If there are no more questions, then Thank you.
One announcement.